I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Frank Film Club, the film club where anything goes and everyone's welcome. Frank Film Club, take one. Hello everybody, welcome back to Frank Film Club. I'm Lowry and I'm here with my friends Maisie and Hannah, and this week it's Christmas! So we have chosen a Christmas film for you this week, although it might be a film that a lot of you didn't realise was a Christmas film, but it is! We're watching Tangerine, which was released in 2015, and you might not have known, but it's set on Christmas Eve. So it's a Christmas film, and that's what we're watching. It's directed by Sean Baker, and it was written by Sean and Chris Burgosh as well. And it's a story about two transgender women, Cindy and Alexandra, who are both sex workers in Santa Monica and Highland. Cindy finds out that her boyfriend has been cheating on her, so she basically just goes and hunts the girl and her boyfriend down and confronts them. It's pretty mad. Cindy's played by Kiki Rodriguez and Alexandra is played by Maya Taylor. I love this film. I've wanted to do this on Film Club for quite a while. So what did you both think?
I knew little to nothing about this movie before I watched it, and I just loved it. I absolutely adored it. Just like the style of filmmaking, like I've never watched anything like this. And I was just like thoroughly entertained and yeah, just glued to the screen the whole time. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yes, I feel a similar way. I found it a little bit jarring with some of the different elements in there. So I couldn't get like fully lost in the world. However, as like an observer, I was aware that I was watching something fabulous. But I just wasn't able to like fully get lost in there. But I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys think about that.
Okay. Well, one of my questions was going to be, did you find it jarring at all? Do you know what you found jarring or why you found it jarring?
I think it was just so chaotic, and the improv went around in circles just a little bit for me, that I was just very aware that I was watching a performance of something that was very interesting and very well put together, but I was just not able to, I think it was just the chaos of it as well, that I just wasn't able to like fully go with them. I was just watching.
I really get what you mean, because I guess like there is some like part of this style which is like it feels like a vlog type thing, even though like they're not the ones like recording it, but it's that kind of thing where you're like observing people's lives and it feels that style where it's like typically when it's shot like this, it's not necessarily a narrative, right? And so you're just like, you're just engaging with it in a different way. But maybe it's that style which actually like had me kind of glued. I just found it like really unpredictable and I don't know, just really highly entertaining. I mean, I guess like at the beginning when it started and there's like those sort of solar flares on the lens and you just like get very quickly that it's shot on a different kind of camera. Like, I don't know, Larry, you've probably got the answers here, but like I felt like, I don't know, it was on some kind of different camera. I don't know, just immediately I felt, yeah, just like captivated by that. Even though I do understand what you mean in terms of it being like a narrative, maybe it's like a little bit more, yeah, a jarring way to consume that.
So I don't know how much you guys know about the actual making of this film, but it was shot on an iPhone.
I knew.
No way.
Did you not know?
Larry told me a day ago.
Oh, Maisie didn't know until I told her the other day, but I thought she might already know.
Guys, save it for the goddamn club.
I know.
Look at me, I'm pretending. No way.
Way. Yeah, it was shot on an iPhone 5S, which
is very old.
Well, this was 2015, right? So, I mean, it was cutting edge then.
Well, basically, they decided to shoot on the iPhone. Like, obviously, like, the fact that they shot on an iPhone kind of gives the film an edge anyway. But it wasn't a choice because of that. Like, well, it was basically a choice because it was such a low budget.
What was the budget?
Well, actually, I didn't mean to bring this game on so quickly, but I did just... I realised when looking at what this budget was, is that I don't really know what film budgets are and in comparison to lots of other films. So I'm going to see if you can guess the budgets of some other films and then we'll look at this budget.
Nice.
So first of all, a film that was on in the same year as this film that won the Academy Award for Best Picture, Spotlight. Can we have any guesses on the budget for that film in dollars?
20.
I was going to say 15.
Oh my God, Hannah, 20 million.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, so next one. Sound of Metal, which is a film that we talked about a few weeks ago. Can we have any guesses on that one, please?
Maybe I would say three to five. Should I just say four then?
Yeah, I was going to say four as well.
5.4 million.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. And then I just want to see what you think, June. What do you think the budget was for that?
Oh, my God. Oh, we're talking 150 million?
It's 165 million for June, wow. Which is so mad in comparison to these indies. And then Fast and Furious 9, an all-time favourite.
Oh, my God.
225 million.
Oh my good God.
They need to share it out a bit more. Anyway, bringing that back to this film, we went on a big tangent there. Can you now guess what the budget was for this film?
100,000?
I'm going to say 40,000.
No, it was 100,000. Damn, you guys...
Hannah, you're so good at this.
Sorry. Am I a financier?
You're really good at this.
I'm actually surprised that it was that much, actually. I think it could be believable for, like, that and more.
I never really thought that you could make something for that little. But then I did meet this one director once, and he had said that he had made, like, films for, like, a ridiculously low budget. And so then that's why I sort of went really, really low. But he's like, you know... No one gets paid. It's not that much of a flex. It's a bit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think something with this film is that they made sure that everyone did get paid. Not much, but they got paid like the minimum amount that you would get paid. I think there's actually like some kind of agreement. So yeah, so it was really low budget. They knew that that was what they were going to work with. And that's where the iPhone idea came in, because Sean was like out of favours for asking him to borrow nice kit. And also, if you get like even a DSLR camera, he was like, even for that, as soon as you've got these big lenses on, you need an extra camera person on to like do the focus or whatever. So he was like, for like one or just two people to be operating the camera, iPhone was the best way to go, which is mad.
Yeah, that is crazy. So like in my head, I'm imagining like literally running around with a camera like this. But how do you focus? Like, do you just have to hope that it focuses on the right thing and then do it again and again and again? And
that's what I'm not massively sure. And I think the focus was quite like, why? So there wasn't like, it was like usually most things were in focus, and they had these like anamorphic lenses that they'd fix onto the iPhone, and then they had a steady cam like thing to hold it as well, because obviously it's so light that you otherwise you'd just be like wobble 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 wobble. So yeah,
but right, so obviously yes, I get that it was like the budget that they had to compromise with a kit. I still think that it was a choice for them to shoot on an iPhone. People have kit, like they're filmmakers. Somebody would have had some sort of kit for them to shoot on. So it still was a choice, even though it was like forced a little bit by their budget constraints. And that was like the one, wasn't it? Tangerine was like the one that was like, oh my God, have you seen that film? It's like shot on an iPhone.
I mean, but he did say that even with something that was a little bit more of a camera, you would need more crew and they couldn't afford that because he shot it.
That's wild.
Yeah. And actually, it isn't the only film that's been shot on an iPhone. I think there were some others around that time. There's probably definitely been more since, but it was just really successful. But I think that is due to the story as well. I think it's like, in my opinion, it's a really great film. I love the story.
Yeah, I think all the elements together create what it should all be together. And I think without that being shot on an iPhone, yeah, maybe it wouldn't have been the same.
I want to tell you some facts about how the story came about and how, yeah, just how the story came about, because it all started from Sean living nearby but knowing that he wanted to do a film which was a story based in Santa Monica and Highland, but he didn't want to go in there with Chris. They planned on writing it together. They didn't want to go in as like two cisgender white men with a script of a place that they didn't know. So they went in and kind of just like started hanging out there a bit and trying to get to know the area and trying to like meet some people. And that's where they met Maya, who plays Alexandra. And they were like, this is what we're trying to do. We want to do this project. We don't really know what it's going to be yet, but we're just trying to like immerse ourselves. And she was like, cool, like I'm up for helping. I can show you people and places. And she was just really up for it. But she was like, but if I'm going to be a part of this project, you need to promise two things. It's got to be brutally honest and it's got to be absolutely hilarious. Because that's just how it is. Like, that's just how it is here. So they were like, okay, yes, we'll do it. And they, at this point, she wasn't definitely cast or anything. She was just there to, like, help. And she introduced them to all these places and people and eventually introduced them to Kiki, who plays Cindy. And then at that point, they started writing the treatment once they felt that they like knew enough. And then they were getting feedback from Kiki and Maya on the treatment. And then they wrote the script. And it was always like really getting loads of feedback from the girls. So
it's like rocks.
Yeah, so true.
If you don't know that world, then you need to meet the people who know the world to bring the story. Because otherwise, how is it going to be real? That is very cool.
Yeah, so they said that they wanted it to be like brutally honest. How much of the story or how much of their characters is like real?
Well, Maya, she said that she was a sex worker in the past. I don't know about Kiki. And like some of the trans people in the movie were also sex workers in the past, but not everybody was. And like, that's not always the case for everybody. So definitely for Maya, I have a feeling that a lot of her character was quite based on her from what was said. Kiki said that she was quite different to Cindy because she was like, Cindy's like way more confident than I am.
I'm so glad that what you said a minute ago, that they made sure that they paid all of the cast, because that's another thing that I'll get. If we're doing like street casting or we're doing casting where we're getting non-experienced actors, it's like, well, great, we can take that out of the budget as well. So it's really great to know that they found those people, but they paid them properly.
That is always one of the first things to go, which is like so wrong, because especially when they've influenced the story so much and like they've like, but like, you know, created pieces of it. It's, yeah, so, so important. So I'm glad that of the small budget that they did have, it went in the right places.
When Maya talks about the film and like, I wanted it to be this, and like, it sounds like she really like feels some ownership over it, which I think is so good. And it's quite obvious that Sean is also like, that's how it's meant to be. And it's like, they've all made it together. So that, I don't know, that just kind of got me thinking, like, do you think that that's something that should be encouraged by directors and that it should kind of be more of a shared out thing when you're making a film.
When we were talking about Limbo and Ben Sharrock, and we had that conversation about like whose right is it to tell another person's story, well, this type of filmmaking, obviously, you know, the actor can't always be super involved in the development of the script and the narrative, but this is one way to tell a story and get something made, which does show like part of society that maybe don't have access or aren't encouraged to filmmake.
I think like being open to like sharing that credit is like really important, especially for a situation like this, because if you have, you know, research things like very deeply with a person, whether they're in the movie or not, like that shouldn't only be kind of revealed if asked in an interview. Like it should be part of like the whole run of the movie, I think. And because at the end of the day, when we sit here and talk about the film, like we have all of these questions kind of for that person, you know, whoever has been like instrumental in like the research or whatever it is. And so for us to have to sort of seek that out, like it would be wonderful if those people were, well, it sounds like in this movie, like that's exactly what happened with Kiki, which is really cool.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool.
Now it's time for In the Club. So now it's time for In the Club, where we ask you for questions about the films. When we asked for questions about this film, we got a really, really lovely email from Chris Hamilton, who has actually sent us emails about a lot of the films that we talk about and has some really good insights onto the film. I think maybe we need to get Chris on the episodes, guys.
Season 3.
Yeah. So Chris's first question was, how did this film do overall representing the cultures it portrayed? Asking from the perspective of someone who isn't familiar with trans or Armenian culture or life in California.
Well, Chris, first of all, I love Chris. I see him chatting on our Instagram all the time. And thank you so much for your really thoughtful questions and insights. We love it. So we were speaking about this earlier in the episode about how the leads were involved in the making and the writing of the film. So I can't say if it is representative because I'm also not part of those cultures. But just from the filmmaking process, I think that's such a good way to make sure it is representative of those cultures that they're portraying.
It's always nice to check, I think, that sort of thing and like know, because you would assume that this was like very realistic, but you just can't tell until you know that, you know, the people involved are also like heavily influencing the story. So yeah, I think that's a great fact. I love that. Chris also said that he couldn't help but notice the use of homophobic and anti-trans slurs. Is that a part of culture and everyday life in the trans community? I also noticed the white characters using the N-word, but it only bothered me a little because it fit with the setting. Maybe trans people feel the same?
Yeah, I feel like reclaiming words as a way of empowerment is a thing that is used worldwide by all different people. For example, the word bitch that's empowering to a lot of people to call themselves a bitch or their friends a bitch and whatever.
Did you make a documentary about that, Lowry?
Yes, I did, actually, Maisie. And it's called Bitch. Because I'm really inventive with names.
What were your findings from that, Lowry, what story were you trying to tell with that documentary?
It was just trying to figure out how different people do use the word, and if it's okay for certain people to use the word, why it's not okay for certain people to say the word. Kind of from that, it just really got me thinking, and I hope a lot of other people thinking, about the power of language and how it's, you can be like, well, if you say something, it doesn't really matter, but it really does. Language is so powerful. So yeah. It was kind of just about that.
What Chris is saying here about they're using homophobic and anti-trans slurs amongst themselves, that's in no way saying to the viewer, like, come to LA and call us this. That's not what it's saying. It's very nuanced, and you should never say that word unless, I don't even know what the unless is. I don't know what the answer is to that. It's a really nuanced thing. You just shouldn't. You shouldn't.
And that is the worry sometimes, that when, like, if some people just don't get it at all, that it's not okay for them to say it, then they will see a film like this or listen to music or whatever and hear it said and be like, well, they said it, so I can say it. And they just don't get it. And I don't know. I think that's just a problem that we'll have until they get it. And I don't know how to make people get it.
Yeah. I feel like it's a reluctancy to get it.
That's
and
true.
And that's what's infuriating sometimes.
Okay, Chris, your next question is, the confrontation, which I love, the confrontation at the donut shop felt forced, in my opinion. How could Razmik not lie out of that? All he had to do was go in and get a donut or a coffee and walk out when his mother-in-law walked in, instead of staying around and letting the nonsense roll downhill. Agree. Because this is something that we spoke about earlier in the episode. This is like some of the risk that you get, I think, when you make something which is really improv-led, that sometimes it feels like, well, like not, it doesn't make sense. And that to me also does not make sense. I will say though, I didn't notice it when I was watching it. I was just enjoying the exchange and I just wanted him to stay. So I probably didn't question it too much. But I think that Chris saying letting the nonsense roll downhill, I think that happens a lot when you're watching something which is improv based.
Yeah, definitely improv based. But I feel like that is something that happens in a lot of the time when I'm watching something that's fictional.
Like horror films, like, why are you going upstairs?
Exactly. And things just being a misunderstanding and it being, like, infuriating because you're like, why can't they just talk to each other and figure out that they both, like, think the wrong thing? Or, yeah, it's like, going back, Wild Child. Like, when the letter goes through the door and it's, like, loosely based on some of the emails that she sent, but it's all been, like, written by that school bully, and then all of the girls are like, we hate you, we can't believe you said this about us. I'm like, oh, that's so annoying, because it's not even true. Like, she actually really likes you guys.
And also, like, a big famous example of when you're like, but why couldn't you have just done that, is Titanic. When it's like, why didn't she just let him on the piece
door.
Of wood? Yeah, or whatever it was. And yeah. I know this is, like, way not to that scale where people are just like, why didn't you just blah? But I feel like you do get that in films a lot. One thing about this comment that could be a factor as to why it was how it was in the film is, I don't know if I said earlier, but Sean Baker said when he started to, before he had written any of the film, is that he wanted it to end with a big confrontation in donut time. So he already had in his head that he wanted a big thing to happen there. So I wonder if that kind of played into this, where it was just like, well, it's just got to happen there and that's what it's going to be. And that's why this has kind of happened.
I see. More of the aesthetic of it.
Yeah.
And same as what Hannah said, like, I was actually just enjoying it and in real time hadn't really worried about the absurdity of it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I just actually really couldn't wait for this scene. But yeah, in hindsight, it's like maybe a little bit of a loophole.
So Chris is... Also, I just realised this is the Christmas episode. And we've got loads of questions. We've got loads of questions from Chris.
Father Chris Hamilton.
So the final question is, why would anyone fight another person over Chester?
Yeah.
Chris got sass. But yeah, great.
I love that. Fair point. It's true. You're like, really?
Yeah, it's a lot of fuss over that guy.
And then to tie it up in a nice little bow, we have a question from Bethan Eleanor H, who asks, why did you choose this as your Christmas film? LA is just not Christmassy.
It's so funny. I'm actually in LA right now and I can vouch that it's not that Christmassy. I'm lucky that I'm staying in a house with people that are very Christmassy. And so being in here is like getting very cozy, but it's just not.
I haven't seen that many Christmas films, to be honest with you.
It's not your bag of soup, is it?
Is that saying?
Bag of soup. No,
it's not a bag of soup for me. If I'm honest,
I recently watched Love Actually again and realised how, like, this is actually like really problematic in so many places, and I really want to talk about it with you guys because I like love it, but now I'm like, oh no, I feel really bad for loving this film.
I can't remember. I haven't seen it for so long. I just like the bit where Andrew Lincoln's standing with the signs.
Well, that's problematic in itself because like she's a married woman and that's his.
Yeah, and he's going, this Christmas, I'll stop now. And she runs out and gives him a big snog. And it's like, well, either you're married or you're not.
Yeah, but she was also like 17 when they filmed that. And her husband and Andrew Lincoln were like 34 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, what the fuck? Also, when, can't remember his name, but the Prime Minister fires that girl so as he can date her. Oh my God. That's so bad.
Oh my God, I know. That's really bad. All of his storyline is like not okay.
It's just not okay. It's not okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff in there, which I didn't realise until actually watching it again.
Yeah, it's funny to rewatch it with your woke mind on. Actually, did not age as well as Legally Blonde. Really did not age as well as Legally Blonde.
It's not my bag of soup, but I will have a bag of soup if you've got one.
I'm going to move on to final thoughts. I'm going to start with my final thoughts. Which are so Sean has got another film called The Florida Project which came out after this with a bit of a higher budget, by the way. I think it was $2 million, so he got some money in the end, which I'd highly recommend watching. And he's also got a new film coming out soon called Red Rocket. I don't know exactly when it's coming out, but it looks pretty good, so keep an eye out for that.
I didn't realise he directed The Florida Project. Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
My final thoughts would be, I think like the more that I learn about Sean and the way that he works, and the more, well, yeah, just that the fact that this movie and so many of his projects are wholly what he wanted to say and do, and even if that has come from like the people his like stars of the movie, I think that he's clearly doing something which is just like very unique and very like he's like a visionary, right? And I think that is always really like wonderful to watch people who create things like that, because everything is like something else right now, and we're especially with everything that's being made from existing IP and, you know, no new individual ideas or anything anymore. And so I think for that reason, like, I loved this movie. And I actually haven't seen The Florida Project, and I obviously haven't seen Red Rocket. So got to see more.
Yeah, I love it even more that I've learned more about it. I loved it as a viewer, but just knowing all of the background and hearing more about his style and how he treats people fairly, but also like really has them involved and gives them the credit for that. I love Sean Baker, so I want to watch more Sean Baker films. And yeah, The Florida Project is wicked also.
Well,
Merry Christmas, gang.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
I hope you enjoyed that episode and it left you feeling somewhat Christmassy. That's actually us done for 2021. So we're going to be taking a little break over next week, having a bit of a chill over the holidays. Well, like, I hope you all are too. But we'll be back first Wednesday of the new year with the all-time classic Little Miss Sunshine. It was released in 2006, directed by Valerie Faris and Jonathan Dayton. And if you haven't seen it already, then you're in for a real treat. And if you have, then watch it again. It's definitely a really good way to start the year. Stay updated with everything that we're doing on at Frank Film Club on Instagram. I hope you have a lovely holiday. I hope you manage to have a rest. And we'll see you on the first Wednesday of 2022. And enjoy Little Miss Sunshine. Bye.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.